It's time for our Budweiser From the Sidelines segment. Of course, it's presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. As we welcome in, as we do each week, Fox 8's own John Telich. John, how are we doing?
Doing pretty good. Really excited to see how these guys respond this week as they head down to Cincinnati to take on those Bengals. Really curious to see what they've got in them.
John, two guys that the Browns were missing in that beatdown against Pittsburgh, Nick Chubb and Wyatt Teller. Just how much did they miss those two? Obviously, you know, a lot, but I mean, I really think they missed those two on Sunday.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of people just, they look at Kareem Hunt and they say, man, you know, this kid is a tremendous back, and he is, and he did lead the NFL in rushing his rookie season. But, you know, what Nick Chubb brings, that downhill mentality, that run people over and still have that burst, to take a 15-yard run and turn it into a 70-yard touchdown run, it's just phenomenal. And so there's a great amount of respect that other teams have when he's on that field. So you miss him. And I think, you know, Chris Hubbard was playing guard for the first time in his career and starting for the first time. And Wyatt Teller had come on, and Wyatt Teller is more of that brawler, mauler, if you will. And that was the type of guy they needed in the interior of their line to take on the Steelers. Because I think you may have seen early in the game there, like after it was a 10-0 score, they had a couple of straight runs where they went right into the teeth of the defense, and Kareem had a couple of nice runs. And it seemed like they kind of backed away a little bit from that. I don't know why. Games dictate you to do certain things at certain times. But Wyatt Teller being involved in that kind of straightforward attack would have been more advantageous. Bottom line is, yeah, you need Chubb, you needed Teller, but the better team clearly won, and the Browns have a lot to look at to see what they can do to be better.
John, let's stick with the offense here for a second. In the Browns' four wins this season, they're averaging 201 yards on the ground. Baker Mayfield averaging a 96.7 quarterback rating in their two losses. Just 107 yards average on the ground and a 59.7 average quarterback rating for Baker. John, that's pretty telling. I mean, as the offense goes, this team goes. And if they're not going well, that equates to a long Sunday afternoon.
It really does. And I think, you know, what's so important to look at when that offense was clicking, and you had, obviously, you had Nick Chubb for several of those wins before he got hurt. But when that, you know, when that offense is clicking, you've just got such an element of that play action that the other guys have to respect. And in many cases, you know, Baker in Pittsburgh, when they found themselves down, he was in the shotgun. And I think that cuts options off for them. In those other games, when the offense was clicking and the running game was going, he would be behind center. He'd roll out. He'd do bootlegs. He'd do all types of stuff to maximize his ability to see downfield and hit his receivers. And so he's got to get better playing from within the pocket. I mean, I think that's pretty much everybody knows that. But in those games where they were successful, he was hitting his throws, a lot of them from outside of the pocket. And when he did step up inside the pocket, he made decisive throws and made a correct read and got rid of the football. He looked more confident. It just seemed like on Sunday, once he threw that pick six, then you can see the little panicky feeling in the pocket, and that's exactly what the Steelers wanted. They wanted to keep him in the pocket with their two great players in Bud Dupree and Watt, and that's exactly what happened. When he was in the pocket, he's just not as effective. So it's quite jarring. You know, you see when you're winning, you know, too. And another factor I think that we have to take into account is when they were running the football effectively. A lot of those times, those were in games where they had takeaways that they took advantage of. And so they get a short field. They get the ball on the opponent's 35-yard line, and Chubb, two runs, three runs. Next thing you know, they're down on the 10-yard line, or then he takes it the final 10 himself, or a pass play into the end zone to Kareem Hunt, who scored quite a bit this year via the pass game. It just looked like they have used more of their arsenal, if you will, when that ground game is going.
Yeah, and I think part of the, you know, struggles in these losses, John, has to do with the fact that you're going up against some of the top defenses in the league. I mean, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, there's two of, what, the top four defenses in the league again, and you play those two four times total a year. Yeah. And I think, you know, once the postseason rolls around, if the Browns get in, I think that can kind of serve you well as far as that experience goes. But, again, that can lead to some real frustrating Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, I know. I don't want people to just think that, okay, Steelers, Ravens, that's two games where you're only going to run 100 yards on the ground and you can't be effective, because we did see them do it in spots a year ago. They did it on that Thursday night when Miles had the helmet incident. Prior to that, they manhandled the Steelers. And then they did it earlier in the season when they went to Baltimore and laid a whooping on the Ravens. So it can be done, but when you know going in each year that you're going to face two organizations that are so good at what they do in all phases of the game for the most part, and defense has been a calling card in Baltimore and in Pittsburgh, then that just puts more of an onus on you as an organization to be better on the offensive side of the football, to be better on the defensive side, so that there can be those scenarios where you get off the your defense goes on the field and gets off in three downs and get your offense the ball back to give them more cracks at scoring. And so it's when they were winning earlier this year, I think we heard them talking. We did when we did our interviews about how they've got to play complementary football, and we didn't see that. And that's a credit in some ways, Rocco, to how good the Steelers are and how good the Ravens are, that they can get you off that even kilter that you're on when you're playing quote-unquote complementary football.
Some of that offensive figuring out and some of, you know, developing the complementary football, that falls on Coach Kevin Stefanski. And I know he said after the game, quote, he won't call some plays again. John, any ideas, you know, what kind of particular plays he's talking about? Are there certain schemes that weren't working against Pittsburgh that he's just going to drop off completely? What did you take from that statement?
Well, I took that he should have had Baker under center more and had Baker roll out or have the pocket move to let him get out in space and to see his targets down the field. And I did mention before that the Steelers were having none of that, in the sense that they have those great perimeter players, their linebackers in Watt and Dupree, who, you know, they were very cognizant of the bootleg possibilities or the rollouts and that sort of stuff. So the Browns played right into their hands. They kept him in the pocket. So I think Kevin probably wants more of a concerted effort to get Baker out there in space a little bit more so he can recognize his targets and deliver the football. And I think also maybe he wanted to, as I alluded to earlier as well, say that he should have committed to the run, that the Steelers would do this run blitz kind of defense where they shoot guys into the gaps, they're in the interior, and they hit a couple of good plays on that, but it didn't seem like they went back to that trough and fed from it, and maybe that's something that he was referring to as well.
Understood. John, final thing from the Steelers game here. The Odell Beckham Jr., I don't really want to call it a tantrum, but he was clearly upset on the sidelines with his cleats off and everything. What do you make of that? Good, bad, does it matter?
Well, I'm not really a big fan when a guy pitches a fit like that, but I think when it's all born out of frustration from the day being such a train wreck for the entire team. Now, I think a lot of people would read that as Odell's mad he didn't get the football. I think Odell's mad that they played so poorly and they were manhandled and they were beaten. And, oh, yeah, a byproduct of all that stuff was that not only was he not getting the football, neither was Jarvis Landry. Now, I'm not going to be on the radio or be on TV and make statements like noted ESPN commentators who say he should demand a trade. I'm not going to go that far because, you know, he was involved in the offense earlier this season when they had signature wins or when the offense was clicking, both Odell and Jarvis. And they were involved in creative ways to get the ball to them, whether it was at the end of the Cowboy game when Odell iced it with that run, or the throws that he caught from his buddy Jarvis. I just think that, yeah, offensively they really could have been more synced up in how they performed. Baker knows that he should have been better. And if Odell is honest, and I think he is, He'll look back at the film and say there were things that he could have done better. But I don't think it was a case of, as these ESPN commentators might say, is that he's going back to the huddle and screaming at Baker or screaming at people on the sidelines, get me the ball, get me the ball. He does have drama that goes with him, and I think you address his address, if you will, if you're Stefanski, but you stress that, you know, quote-unquote, we are all in this together, and that you will get the football, and the Browns know they have to. He's a difference maker. He's like the Myles Garrett of their offense. I mean, you know, Myles Garrett is a number one overall pick. Baker is a number one overall pick. And I think you have to play like that. Miles has this year. He's playing like one of the defensive player of the year nominees, if you will. And Baker's got to bring his game up, which he understands being the number one pick in the 18 draft. And Odell being the player of his stature, he knows that he can be a difference maker because he's shown it. So they have to find ways to get him the ball, let him be more creative to score for them.
John, we can close on this. I know the schedule lightens up a bit. You got six games upcoming against teams with a combined five wins between them, so I think there's a good opportunity to stay within that divisional race. But as of right now, John, does it seem like this team is still really, you know, that 1 year away, or could this year still be a year where they make an impact?
Well, I made a mistake of predicting that the Browns would beat the Steelers on Sunday, so, you know, I'm falling on the sword right now for all of our listeners. But I did feel, and comparing them back to the 80s, when they had the Bernie years, I do feel, that they're about a year away. And you could see a dramatic shift in how this team is put together and how it's prepped for next season, knowing that you went through this season, you eked out enough wins to maybe make the playoffs, probably exit in the first round, but still make the playoffs, which you hadn't done since 2002 season. And so with the acquisitions that they can make, I think the trade deadline coming up is pretty big because the Browns, they've got the most cap space, and a lot of teams, knowing that the cap might not go up or might stay the same or might shift in a bad direction, the Browns would be in a good position to make some kind of deals at this trade deadline. We'll see if they're active in that regard, but you could find some bargains because teams are going to say, oh, my God, the cap's not going to go up for us. And we're in cap hell, if you will, and we've got to get rid of some players, and some may try to trade them at the deadline itself. So if they play their cards right and they're prudent about how they construct this team, next year really can be a year where you say, yeah, this is a playoff team, and this is how well they can perform because they have built themselves in a sound way as opposed to a haphazard way.
Oh, you're killing me, John. You're killing me. It's always 1 year away. One more year. One more year. It's next year. But I guess, hey, we've been through it many, many times before. What's one more on top of, you know, the already so many one more year statements that we've made?
Yeah, you're right. Man. Well, next year, again, I think they can make the playoffs this year. They've got that extra spot in the playoffs in their conference. So there's no reason why they can't be that team to get into the playoffs. But I think to really kind of come of age, if you will, like the 86 Browns came of age with Bernie and Mack and Biner and Webster and Langhorne, then they can be that kind of a team to break free next year and really be a better team in the AFC. So we'll see. What happens.
Better late than never, I suppose, right?
You bet.
All right. Well, John Telich, again, he was our guest here on our Budweiser From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Road. John, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes here. Look forward to catching up next week.
I'll talk to you then. Thanks, buddy.